You're listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by the National Retail Federation. Join us for a look inside the world's largest and most interesting industry. And now your host, Bill Thorne.
Welcome to another episode of Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, every day, everywhere. I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and I'm joined today by my co-host, my colleague, and my friend, Jessica Hibbard. Hello, Jessica.
Hello, Bill. Great to be here in Chicago.
I know.
We are on the road with our podcast.
You want to talk about retail, you talk about the Magnificent Mile.
I mean, yeah.
That's retail alive.
We are not far from Michigan Avenue, and we are at Retail's Academic Symposium, an event hosted by the NRF Foundation, and we've got access to a lot of really interesting people, including our guest today.
I know. We're going to welcome Brian Beitler, who's the Chief Marketing Officer at Lane Bryant. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Excited to be a part of the show and share a little insight about the retail industry from our perspective.
Brian, you have some vast experience in retail. How did you get here? I mean, you think about the path when you were in college and you were thinking about your career. This is where you ended up. Did you have any idea this is what the route was going to be?
Yeah, so this wasn't the journey I anticipated. You know, I come from a banking family. Both my parents were in that industry, felt that should be my path. I was great at math as a young kid, thought finance and that industry made a whole lot of sense for me. And then I got into math and finance class, and sorry, Mom and Dad, found it very boring.
You may have found it boring. I found it challenging. That was not in my direction.
So for me, I made this switch. I thought, you know what, let me go into marketing. I thought, you know, that for me fit much better. I did some sales jobs when I was a kid. I was good at talking and I was good at selling. And so I thought that's probably a better fit for me after a couple of quarters in math and in finance. And so I did that. And I was working through my young years as a college student. I worked full time, went to school full time, got married when I was 19, had a child by 21, had three by 24. Life was just on fire and moving fast as a young guy.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling tired just thinking about that.
I was tired for a good. Actually, it's been three decades now. I think I've been tired, but no, it was an exciting time, and I worked at a place where I had a chance to work with a company, Mattel. And they were a client of mine as I was finishing my MBA program, and they offered me a role. And so we left Utah, which is where I'm from, and went to California, and I started in the world of retail and marketing and did several things for them. I ran strategy for a while, and then I was part of the Hot Wheels brand and sold cars, tracks, and play sets and those kinds of things for a period of time.
I bet your kids really liked that.
My kids enjoyed that, and our piggy bank did too. Great discounts as an employee of Mattel with lots of young children. The company store was terrific. Mm-hmm. And I'd been doing that for a while, and you know, I had an opportunity to come across at Toys R Us. And in my mind, I thought, you know, that's interesting. And it was near New York, and I wanted to live near New York. My grandmother and my father was from Brooklyn, and I'd been back there. So I thought, you know, we'll make this move. We'll stay in the toy industry. I'll go to the retail side. And honestly, Bill, I got to retail, and I loved it. I loved the pace. I loved the speed of retail. It fit so much better with my personality. It took a long time to get new products to market, or what seemed like a long time, you know, 20 years ago to get products to market. And then I arrived at retail, and you could have an idea for an event, a promotion, a birthday club, the Jeffrey Birthday Club, and you could launch it in a couple of months, and it was live and it was moving. And that pace was exciting. So I did that for a few years, and then doors just kept opening in the retail space for different and exciting new challenges. And that's what happened. And that's how I kind of got where I am today. So I didn't set out saying, I know I'm going to be a retail maven. I wasn't one of those guys that worked in a retail store and fell in love. The journey came a little later on, and it, you know, I blame New York. I just at some point wanted to be next to that city, that great city, and here was an opportunity, and that opened the retail door.
Well, regrettably, New York has an attraction to a number of people. Jessica is moving to New York in the not-too-distant future.
Yes, yes, I am.
We're losing her
too.
As my co-host.
Well, that's sad.
This is my farewell tour, yeah. But so you talked about your career path. Tell us what you're doing now at Lane Bryant.
Yeah, so today I am responsible for the marketing behind a couple of our three of our brands that belong. Lane Bryant belongs to the Ascena family portfolio of companies. I lead marketing for what we brand the Plus segment, which includes Lane Bryant, Catherine's, and Cacique, our intimates brand. And so my responsibility is to help partner with my product and store partners to tell the story about our brand and what we're trying to do and what we believe in and why we have the best apparel possible for her.
So as a woman, I always have this sort of skepticism of like a guy trying to do marketing for a female audience. So tell me what it's like to market to an audience when you're not part of that audience. Is it challenging or is it even more fun or how do you approach that?
So it's interesting. It's
well, he is married too.
That is true.
Keep that in mind.
I'm sure you know some women.
I do know a few women. And so women have always been my client. Now, in fairness, I am married happily for 25 years this year. I also have 5 daughters.
Oh, my Lord.
All right. So you're an expert.
That question has been answered. Moving along.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider me an expert. And I do have one son in there who's 13, poor guy. But no, so I've been around. But I don't think being a father particularly can make you a good marketer for women. What I would say is most important is that you have to listen. What I think is interesting about my role certainly is that I don't have an experience base to come from to say I know what it's like to feel in any way like what a woman experiences. So that requires me to turn on my empathetic ears, right, a lot more than I might when I deal with a men's product, right? If you ask me about a men's product, sports or cars or clothing or otherwise, I can give you a very strong opinion of what's best and why it's best, but that is always based on my perspective. And what's interesting is very little of what I can do and what I do today can be based on my perspective. It has to be based on aggregating perspectives from a lot of different sources and a lot of different people and a lot of different women. And so in some ways, I think, you know, if you can shed your arrogance and your ego, sometimes not being the customer is a very powerful position to operate from because it requires you to spend a lot more time getting to know the customer and to understand the things that she cares about or that he cares about, depending on who your customer is. And sometimes when you're the customer, your own perspectives can, and do I observe it in business all the time, influence the decisions you make regardless of how the customer feels.
I think that's great advice for any marketer is to just listen and shed your ego. It's terrific. You know,
Lane Bryant is probably the most recognized name in plus-size clothing. And during the symposium, you were talking about the fact that body equality has become a national conversation. How do you use the power of marketing to influence those conversations?
So it's interesting, right? Part of the journey that we've been on, Bill, as a brand has been to reshape both the way our brand is thought about, but also the perspectives that we have on women in general. And, you know, I joined the brand a little over just about three years ago. And, you know, as I was meeting then with our then CEO, Linda Heasley, before joining, we were talking about this conversation. We realized that you know, having come out, and I'd come most recently, well, not most recently, but I'd spent some time at Kohl's and seen us sell to both smaller size women and plus size women. And it was clear that we made a distortion on where our focus was. And we were having some conversation about that. And with some research around the reality that the average size woman in the country was about a size 14. And it seemed interesting that you have these brands, these large department stores that have very little focus on what essentially is, you know, at least half and in many cases the majority of the market. So we were talking a little bit about that and why. And we were having, you know, more of a philosophical discussion than a commerce discussion. And, you know, with 5 daughters, 4 of them at the time that were in their, you know, teenage years, it became, you know, evident that this conversation was as much about what we're comfortable seeing as it was about the apparel that we were going to sell. And what I realized pretty quickly was there was an opportunity to reshape the way that we talked about women. I had a young daughter who had struggled with eating and the way she felt about herself. And you know, we tried to be great parents and thought we were saying all the right things and doing all the right things from a confidence perspective. And in spite of that, right, still struggling with you know, how she felt about herself. And then I realized I had lots of daughters who didn't feel as good as they should. And we thought we can have an impact on this conversation because we are one of the few brands that have a heritage of focusing on people that society chooses not to see and or not to at least see as desirable or as attractive. And so we stepped back to say, you know, how and what is our brand's role in that? And the first role we identified was very simple, which is, look, we've got to improve the content of our fashion, right? If we truly believe she deserves to be seen and celebrated, then we've got to make sure we've got the kind of fashion that she is worthy of and that's worthy of her and who she is. We realized we were going to need to change the voice in the marketplace. As I met with customers and traveled the countryside, the reality is that, you know, everybody knew the brand. It had been around for a long time. My mother was a customer of Lane Bryant when I was a young boy. I remembered going to that store with her. And, you know, but what I also learned as we started the work is that everybody, when you have a long brand like that, people say, look, I know your brand. It's a great brand, but you're for someone else. You're for my mom. And that's what I heard. I literally heard customers say, you're for my mom. And that's when I met with 20-year-olds. And when I met with 30-year-olds, they were for my mom. When I met with 50-year-olds, they were still saying it's for your mom. And I'm like, okay, I'm running out of years before somebody, you know, no longer exists. So
An interesting challenge for marketing an established brand is that everybody thinks they know it, but they don't know it as you want them to see it, maybe.
And that was the key. So we stepped in to say, you know, we did meet some younger women who were part of the brand and who did love what we did. And we said, look, how do we begin to celebrate and to showcase for others what existing customers already knew? And how do we answer the call that we were hearing from our customers? I spent, you know, and I do this in every retailer I go to. So, you know, I use an adage, which is discuss in the office, decide in the store. And what that means is, right, at corporate, we have an incredible amount of data available to us from transactional behavior. We can append demographic data. We can go do ethnographies with people, and we can start to gather all this data. But we don't make any decisions until we get to the store and talk to a person face to face. And so when I join a brand, I spend about 4 to 8 weeks in the store physically talking to consumers and hearing their stories. You know, back to the question that Jessica asked about, you know, how does a guy market? Well, I go to the store and, you know, I personally interviewed about 120 women, brought back their stories with pictures of them and the conversations that I'd had. And one of the insights that came out of that was, if the first thing we had to do was get fashion right, the second thing was they had a strong desire, many of them, to be seen and celebrated. They couldn't understand why, even at times, we didn't see and celebrate them based on the models and the women that we chose to feature as part of our messaging and part of our campaigns. And so we set about to change that. We said, okay, we've got to bring great fashion. We've got to make sure these women are seen and celebrated. And then the third point evolved even larger than that, which we said, we need to have the country have a conversation about this, because it's not acceptable. And again, I was raising daughters at the time. It's not acceptable that our daughters are raised in a world where they have to meet some body standards. In so many ways, the country had come such a long way in terms of thinking about women's rights and, you know, they could vote. Lena founded the company before women could vote, right? So, you know, but women could vote. We're working on getting them in equal jobs. We're working on getting them to the top of boards and the top of Fortune 500 companies, but we're still languishing way behind. And, you know, I think part of that is because there's this root problem that happens when young women are very young, which is their focus first often is, how do I look and what do I need to look like in order to be seen as desirable, successful, even in you know, grade school and middle school and high school. And we realize we have to blow up this notion of not celebrating people as they are, because culturally it wasn't right. So we took this notion of, hey, we've got this great brand, you know, belief, and it went way back to our founder that women deserve great fashion and we were going to have to step up the fashion. We had this powerful customer insight that our customer wanted to be seen and celebrated in our own campaign and beyond. And we had this, you know, fourth insight that culturally there was a need for a shift, and there was bubbling in the culture around body equality. And we said, gee, if we can take those three things and put those together, we can build a powerful brand.
You know, it's interesting because that's pretty spectacular. And I think that any successful retailer does one very core thing, and that is listen to the customer and take those insights and make the decisions based off of that, not just necessarily research that you pay for, but it's research that you get while you're standing in the aisle of the store with the person that's going to make that purchase. How do you develop a culture around that? I mean, you've got over, 700 stores?
Yep.
And
yeah.
So I would think that you would have to have a pretty set program that you get those store associates engaged, involved, invested in order to make that successful.
You're spot on. Part of it is, you know, there's two pieces to it, right? One is the cultural belief part, and how do you build, right, that internally, this belief that listening is more important than knowing. And that starts with leadership talking about at the forefront how critical it is to hear the customer. And then the second piece is, and a lot, you know, I tell people all the time internally, people get tired of this, don't tell me what you think. Tell me what you think the customer thinks. I'm not interested in what you think, but I'm very interested in what you think the customer thinks. And then the systemic portion is the second piece, which is now you got to put programs and processes that facilitate and make that belief possible, right? And so, you know, there's every week, right, we're receiving a recap through the store's organization led by an incredible store leader, right, who's gathering firsthand from store managers who gather from their teams, who consolidate with district managers, who consolidate with the regional, and then in comes this report. And I'm as anxious to read that report from the front lines every Monday as I am to see how we closed out the week financially. And, you know, those pieces share equal weight in our mind in terms of understanding it. Secondarily, right, is structured programs to get both executives as well as other levels of the corporate organization into the store to work firsthand with customers. And it's not about going to the store to see how your product sells or to see, hey, did we set the store right? It's going to the store to have a conversation with a customer. And that takes time and practice and repetition, because it can be uncomfortable to walk up to a complete stranger, right, and ask them about what they're wearing for their intimate apparel for the day, right? So, you know, particularly if you're
from... Who is this creepy guy asking me about my undergarments?
That's exactly right.
Our annual report. This is me. Yeah.
But as you develop, right, a level of comfort, you know, it's remarkable how candid customers do want to be if they can see there's a sincere interest in understanding what we can do differently for each of them. And look, the fashion world's not perfect. You know, Lane Bryant, we ebb and flow. As we got the brand, you know, refocused, we had some really good quarters. We've had some tough quarters when we missed the fashion. And that's the nature of this industry. It's part of the reason I love it, is that it is, you know, it requires you to be on your game all the time in order to win. It's part of what makes retail such an exciting place to be. But if you listen, and if you programmatically put processes in way to do it, we think you can win more often than you lose. You can have a, you know, better than 500 batting average, and you're going to be in a good place.
So one of the things that I was thinking about as you're talking about all this research, and since we are here at the academic symposium and college professors are learning about the retail industry, like say I'm in college and I'm studying marketing and I want to be an amazing marketer. It sounds like I'm going to need to learn how to do some research. I'm going to need to understand psychology. What are some of the other like skills or types of knowledge that you would want someone on your team to have in order to be extraordinary at retail marketing?
So there are a couple of things that are important for me. And this is regardless of whether or not you're an art designer, right? You're someone that truly comes out of art school and you're a creative, you know, I don't want to say creative mind because everybody's creative, but you're an artistic mind and you can work with your hands to create beautiful things. Or you come out from the marketing side, right? And you're, you know, a strategist and an analyst. For me, there are a couple of things that are, and they're not going to surprise you given this last conversation, but first and foremost is someone who has an empathetic ear and an empathetic side, right? So I want people who have a strong ability to hear and relate to what others feel. Because at the core, that's what we're designing for, is for a customer. Two is I want, regardless of which side of the house you come on, I want you to have a strong analytic capability or problem-solving capability, I'll put it. Because again, sometimes we look at artists and we say they're not analytical. They are, they're just different, right? It's about solving problems. So, you know, people who come out of school, you know, what I want to see and hope to have come from academia, right, is kids who've faced problems and been asked to solve problems. First and foremost, I don't care whether or not you're terrific at math or not terrific at math. What I do care about is, are you really good at seeing a problem and finding ways through, around, or to solve those problems? So that's the second piece. And the third piece is I'll categorize it as what I call good taste, right? Mm-hmm. Which is this ability to see things that other people would think are interesting or attractive or desirable. And that doesn't mean having good taste for yourself. It means having good taste for other people, that you're able to look at a group of people within some reason, and then be shown two or three different things and go, which one do you feel strongly that group of people would be most attracted to? But at the core of it, it's those three things. It starts, one, with empathy, right? Can I feel, hear what other people are going? Because the next two aren't going to be very good if I don't have that. And then, can I solve a problem? And do I have, you know, good taste? Do I have an ability to see what people want? And that cuts across whichever discipline you are, whether you're someone who's learned social media, you're going to be a programmer on my team working to design, you know, solutions for e-commerce, or you're going to be an art director, or you're going to be a strategist. Those three things are our core.
That's fantastic. Brian, I could talk for the next 2 hours about this. Your passion about the industry and what you're doing at Lane Bryant is absolutely fantastic, because not only are you selling a product, you're selling a conversation that needs to be had, and not selling it, but leading it, and yep. Which is really, really important. So if I wanted to learn more about Lane Bryant, where would I go?
So for that, that's easy. You can email me directly and I'll respond. So I'm brian.beitler@lanebryant.com. And if you're curious about the business, send us a note.
That's great.
All right.
So one part of this podcast is a section that we called Rapid Fire. And we're going to ask you a few questions, and you just have to say the first thing that comes to mind.
Perfect.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Jessica.
Okay. Well, you mentioned social media. Do you have a favorite social media platform? What do you go to most?
I'm Instagrammer.
Instagram. All right.
So you worked in, you know a lot about Hot Wheels.
I do.
What's your favorite Hot Wheels product?
Oh, that's interesting. It was the Octoblast. Great, great toy. Cars went around a big fireball. It would blow up and things come out. We got in a little bit of trouble because kids were getting hit by cars.
That sounds amazing. What's the last great show you binged on Netflix?
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm not a Netflix binger. So there is no Netflix binge, but I'm an American Ninja Warrior fan through and through, and I don't miss an episode.
Those are pretty great. Yeah.
So a friend's going to go on vacation. He comes to Brian and says, "What book do you recommend that I read?"
Oh, right now the book I love is called Accidental Superpower, and it's a conversation about how America became America from an advantage perspective.
Ooh, that's interesting. Fantastic. Bill would like that kind of book, I bet.
I'm going to look in line as soon as this is over. Well, Brian, I can't thank you enough for joining us, and thank you for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You're going to post more information about topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can also find links to other episodes. And subscribe to the show and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We're also on Google Play and Stitcher. Jessica, absolutely fantastic. Wonderful conversation.
This is a great conversation.
And Brian, I hope that we get you back someday.
Thank you.
I think this
would
is a conversation we could have again and again and again.
Appreciate
congratulations
that.
Good luck on the work that you're doing at Lane Bryant.
You've been listening to Retail Gets Real, brought to you by NRF. For more information about the National Retail Federation, visit us online at nrf.com.